A warm welcome to new listeners and old friends. This is the latest episode of Talking Golf.
It's not easy. We need to keep learning ourselves as coaches. We need to keep adapting to the situation. I'm always learning, I'm always reading, I'm always researching. Same with Dennis, same with Dave, same with Phil, same with Payo. We're always constantly trying to push those boundaries.
Welcome back to Talking Golf. We're very fortunate today to be joined by a guy who you probably haven't heard of, but who's been a major part of Francesco Molinari's climb up the world rankings, a guy that I work with a couple of players. His name's Rob Goldup. Now I'm going to get Rob to explain a little bit about what he does and how he fits into Francesco's team and Torbjorn's team and Ricardo Gouveia's team. And then we're going to try and explore a little bit about what it's like to A, coach these guys and how to get them performing better. So welcome, Rob.
Hello, Hugh.
Hello, Rob. Nice to see you. Thanks for your time today. So why don't you start by talking a little bit about what you do? What is it that you offer?
I offer, traditionally trained as a trainer and massage therapist. And I guess, what do I offer? Just trying to create an environment for the guys to do their best and develop and learn.
Because one of the unique things that I've experienced working with you in our relationship goes back probably 7 or 8 years. We worked with Ollie Wilson initially. And I'd like to think we've both developed significantly as coaches and human beings since then. But you are a guy who's fascinated by high performance, what it takes to take a player from here and create a genuine high performer, which clearly with Francesco and the guys we're talking about and Torbjorn, you make a difference. But you're also a fitness trainer. Is that a decent way to describe what you do?
Yeah, trainer.
Yeah.
We don't need to jazz it up anymore than what it is.
No, it is what it is. How did you get into that? What was the sort of journey that you took to?
So initially, I was a fairly decent football player. I was from 13 to 18 with Charlton Athletic. Went through the system, youth team, reserves. Got an injury.
Yep.
And that kind of led me down the route of kind of obviously training and soft tissue therapy and how to rehab. And that's where the journey kind of began when I was kind of 18, so about 20 years ago.
And how did you go about qualifying in that?
Well, there was a course back then, which was a 3-month diploma in combination of different attributes from training and gym work and soft tissue therapy. And then obviously over the years, I've gone on and learned lots of different techniques and from training to soft tissue to movement to strength, conditioning, speed, power.
How do you end up going from football to golf? Because that's it. One of the things that intrigues me about you guys is how you end up in the golf world, which historically has not been massively pro-fitness, pro-conditioning.
The opportunity came through another colleague that was setting up a company to look after the welfare of the players.
Yep.
And there was a role for a conditioning expert guy. And I had to open the door and got my foot in, and 8 years, nearly 9 years later, I'm still doing it.
Yeah, and doing it quite well, I think.
I think so. Well, I try and do my best, Hugh.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we have these philosophical debates. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. As we wander around golf courses around the globe. And one of the things that has always struck me about you is that your motivation is absolutely genuine. You genuinely only care about that human being that you've got in front of you and what he or she needs to do to become a better performer. The environment you create as a coach is incredibly good for nurturing development. So on that note, what do you feel are the main keys to make an athlete a better performer?
If I can go back a step.
Absolutely, yeah.
In terms of my football career and always being sporty, I was massively, massively competitive.
Yeah.
Hugely competitive. So you come into an environment where I think golf historically has been behind the times in terms of a lot of different developmental aspects to both technique, to learning, to conditioning, to we can name lots of different attributes.
And I still think by and large golf is behind the curve in that regard.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So just coming out here and creating an environment where coaches and teams can just simply ask the question in an environment where the athlete and the coach can discuss, can review, can just talk about how they can develop and how they can improve things, in a trusting environment, in a developmental environment.
An environment that it's safe to fail in.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, I mean, that to me is the big thing that lacks in a lot of coaching relationships, not just in golf. I suspect it's the same across all sports and all walks of life, but ultimately, when you take away any element of fear of getting fired or scoring poorly or performing poorly, you're then in a place where you can genuinely influence that player.
And that has to come from being 100% your intention is pure of wanting to help develop
absolutely
your
agree.
Athlete yeah. or your client, which in this industry, in the golfing industry, we are always fearful of being sacked. So you do need to, on one hand, you need to tread carefully, yeah. but on the other hand, if you tread too carefully, you can find yourself left behind and not asking the right questions at the right times.
And ultimately, that to me is one of the biggest keys about in what you do is being able to ask the right question at the right time. Because the players that are afraid to be asked those questions will get overtaken very quickly, increasingly quickly in this generation, where there seems to be reams of great young players coming out almost on an annual basis now.
For sure. A lot of that comes from having the space and the time to observe, you know, just know your athlete, know your client, manage their personality, know when to step in, when not to step in, read body language, when is it appropriate to go in and say, actually, I need to ask you a question because I don't understand what it is you're doing there. Whether that's in the gym, whether that's on the range like we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we work
yeah.
together. It's just that kind of, that crossover. And if you think of the Olympic rings within, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a coach, but there are just fundamentals of any environment where you should be able to ask a question.
But ultimately, we're all psychologists and coaches.
For sure.
You can't coach at this level without being a master psychologist. Whether you have the certificate to prove it or not is another thing.
Correct.
But if you don't understand how different players function. And
that's not to say, you know, I know my skill set.
Yeah.
And I'll be the first to refer out if I feel we can get some improvement, whether it's, you know, I work with a great team on the physical side, sports chiros, functional med guys.
Yeah.
I'm not professing to know it all, but if I can create an environment where we can create an environment of trust where we can pull people in as and when we need to, and it's all for the right intention. Yeah, and that helps, I think, the athlete develop.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
With trust, with safety, with, you know, they're able to expose themselves. And that's how we adapt, and that's how we learn, and that's how we're challenged, and that's how we improve.
And ultimately, golf, I think, has probably been one of the most guilty sports in terms of fear of exposing yourself to failure in practice. You come walk along a driving range in the European Tour or PGA Tour, there's an awful lot of guys who are going through the motions of hitting golf balls, possibly with the belief that it's going to make them better. But there's very few that are putting themselves in uncomfortable positions on a daily basis.
That's the thing with most other sports, practice. If we take football, for example, when I played, by nature of practice, it's already competitive by the nature of the game. Here, in golf, the nature of practice, it's very hard to get that competitive carryover when you're out on the course, for example. So trying to create that environment when you're practicing can be done, obviously, and it should be done within the environment of the golf course on the range. Not many people do.
Absolutely right.
But it's also then challenging the guys in other ways. You can challenge guys both mentally and physically in the gym.
Yep.
There's windows of opportunity to do that,
mm-hmm.
which is part of, you know, one of my remits with working with the guys. When can we do that? When can't we do that? But there's lots of ways of challenging the guys for them to adapt and learn. But obviously, ultimately, on the golf course and on the golf range is where they should be doing it for.
And the reality of the game of golf is that golf, by its very nature, is probably the sport which you have to manage the most amount of variables. Not only is it the most amount of variables, it's the most amount of variables in a pressure-filled situation, regardless of whether you're hitting the first tee shot on Thursday or whether you're hitting the seventh, you're trying to close out the tournament on the Sunday. Every shot's different, and every shot has a degree of pressure associated with it. Yet the practice that the majority of people are going through does in no way recreate that.
Correct.
No way. So I want to touch a little bit on the stuff you've done with Francesco, because it's quite an interesting team dynamic.
I can't tell you anything.
How have you fitted in with, because you've got Dennis Pugh, who you I think you'd see the sort of technical stroke golf side of things, obviously one of the most respected
coaches.
Yeah.
Great coach.
Dave Allred, who's very much from a performance side. And then you're looking after the physical side, nutritional side, and somehow fitting in with Dennis and Dave?
Yeah, we just, over the years, Fran worked with Dennis to start with.
Forever, yeah.
And then I came into the picture 8.5 years ago. And then Peo, big part of the team.
Peo being the caddy.
Yep. And then end of 2016, Dave came in. And then recently, Phil Kenyon on the technical side. Yeah. It's just been a natural, organic growth of Fran's development as a player, as a person, and as a professional. And 20 years, however many years, hard work.
It's taken 20 years to be an overnight success.
And he's a great professional, works very hard.
It's interesting to me that it's taken 8 years to build that team. Because one of the great mistakes that I think a lot of the younger guys who come out here make is that they almost abandon everything they did in their amateur careers, everything they did to get here, and surround themselves with coach, psychologist, fitness trainer, putting coach, short game coach. And they end up ultimately trying to satisfy every one of them. Where with Fran, you've got the long-term coach. Dennis has, I don't know, a relationship of probably 15 to 20 years with Fran. Yeah. And you've added to the team as and when it's required, as opposed to just building the team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's where the natural organic kind of growth comes from, where if I take my work, for example, that was at a time when he needed the care. He did have care through the company that was out here at the time, Pro Golf Health. And then there were different, within the physical realms, there was different things that we needed work on and improved on. But it just gave me the opportunity with Dennis to start to explore how, as a team, without any egos, without any poor agendas or intentions, it's like, how do we make Fran one of the greatest or the best as he can golfer that we can make him?
Yeah.
Would I change anything? Probably not, in terms of it's just naturally, organically happened. And at each time that there's been a stage where we need to have an intervention, we were able to sit down as a team and discuss it and say, right, what's the best at this point in time? Where do we go?
Yeah.
And is that a case of, right, we need to bring Dave in.
Yep.
We need to bring Phil in. We need to get a caddy. We interviewed for caddies.
Yeah.
Which got a few laughs on the tour.
It's interesting. I want to come back to the caddy thing in a minute, because there's definitely, that to me is a much undervalued role in the context of high performance in golf. But going back to Fran's team, how is there anyone that you would say leads the team, or is it very much a cooperative where you all know as and when to fit in and do your work?
Fran ultimately leads the team in terms of being the boss.
Yeah.
But it's an open, trusting environment again, where we can all have our say based on our expertise, and it's all well listened to, and it's largely down to the fact that our intentions are we want the best for Fran. Again, it becomes easy when that's created. It becomes easy. It's not easy. We need to keep learning ourselves as coaches. We need to keep adapting to the situation. I'm always learning. I'm always reading. I'm always researching. Same with Dennis. Same with Dave. Same with Phil. Same with Peo. We're always constantly trying to push those boundaries, develop and learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about Peo, because people who've listened to this podcast fairly regularly will know that I'm a firm believer that the caddy is probably the most important member of the team, just purely because he's the only guy or girl that can have an impact when he's actually competing or when the player is out there under the gun. So you mentioned you went through an interview process. How many guys did you interview?
We four guys. So we kind of obviously had a short list and interviewed four guys.
Was that guys that Fran had said he quite fancied working with?
Or yeah.
Was
it? Okay. Yeah. So based on the experience of people that we knew and had contact with, and it was like, okay, well, this guy's a great guy, he's a good caddy, boom, let's get him in, this guy.
So what was it about Peo that, first of all, set him apart from the other candidates that ultimately led to you selecting him?
Many attributes. One of his demeanour and his energy. I know in the past, I knew from past experiences that Peo had done a lot of number crunching and was happy to, knowing that we was going to come into more performance-based work. So there was kind of an element of, you know, keeping track of numbers. And so that was why he got one of the calls as being...
And that's what attracted you in the first place.
Yeah, and ultimately it was Fran's decision. We just guided and helped that process, me and Dennis, for Fran to make a decision on what he felt was the best person for Fran.
And that must be 4 years ago now?
Three years ago.
And coming up to date now. What is it about Pao that makes him so good for Fran? Because certainly the pair of them, certainly watching the last nine holes in the Open Championship, it was obviously a very tight team. They obviously understood how each other functions and what buttons to press, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, over a three-year period, they've had that experience to work with each other enough to know when to step in, when to step out, when Pao needs to step in and step out. I know Dave's done a lot of work with the guys in terms of their language,
yep.
In terms of how they communicate.
Yep.
They communicate in Spanish, but also just the words that they will use to describe or to determine target, not using negative avoidance in any way. So just over those years of, again, adapting, learning, challenging themselves as a team, they've created that team. Team as being, I think, the vital word in that context is they are a team. There's a respect.
Which is very obvious when you see the pair of them work.
Yeah. Pao's a great guy, does a great Spanish omelette. 12 eggs,
yeah.
Huge.
And that's just yours?
That's just mine. He's a team player. He'll be texting and like, hey, Fran's energy's been good this week, or what do you think about this? And it's within the whole team. We're constantly communicating just to keep a track of where things are.
And how much of that communication will go through Fran? Or is there a lot of stuff that's going on behind the scenes that Fran will be
unaware
of?
There's always going to be elements to
it. Has to be.
Where the coaches are discussing things about the players. No, but then we assimilate and take that information in and pass the relevant information onto the player.
And again, through that atmosphere of trust that you've created, Fran's entirely comfortable knowing that that's happening, number one. And number two, he also knows that the stuff that gets fed back to him has been properly discussed, properly researched, before you even put it in front of the player.
Oh, for sure. And there's always, like with the training side and the fitness side, there's always a rationale behind why we do what we do.
Absolutely.
And there's many threads. You can coach a deadlift or a lunge with many different threads and intentions.
Yeah.
It's just the way you then coach it and what it is you're trying to achieve with that particular movement.
Yeah.
And then that grows with all elements of the team.
Yeah. Let's change direction a little bit now and talk about the impact of proper training within golf.
Fitness training?
Yeah. We've got the golf side of things, and I think in this industry we've got a bundle of really genuinely gifted coaches who understand their skill set and are very good at communicating it. How difficult have you found it to integrate strength, fitness into players' day-to-day routines?
A couple of things to take on board would be obviously their training history and experience. There's a screening process initially to kind of gather some metric data in terms of how they move.
Yep.
Depending on that, their athleticism, do we then start to collect data around strength and power and speed? So they're all different. You need obviously a starting point. It's then mapping out and having a roadmap to where and what the developmental process is with that. It could take some guys, and I know for one example with one of my players, it took 3 years initially to get to a period or where I would consider it was proper strength training during their winter period.
Okay.
So it took 3 years to get to that stage just purely because of the windows of opportunity are small.
So limited.
For actually generating any kind of...
And was this player, was he a guy who looked after himself before then, or is this something...
Initially, no. Pretty new to it, hence why it took 3 years. Whereas another player would, from experience, I would feel comfortable within 6 months, like this year coming into this season, if there's a 4 or 5 week period, I would be looking to phase, after a couple of weeks, some sort of strength training.
So what's the benefit of strength training to golfers?
Injury prevention.
Although there will be people who argue that there are reams of players getting more injured because of strength training.
Yeah, see that argument, I think you've got to look at now the overall loads that are being put on the body, not just through travel, but through, you know, like EMF, electromagnetic frequency, radiation when we fly, poor diet, increased emotional stresses, potentially through social media. You could go on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the overall physiological stress going through the system now is far more than what it was 50 years ago.
And golfers specifically, I think, suffer from more. They're exposed to more of that. The amount of travel involved is ludicrous.
The amount of travel, the amount of actually time spent preparing for their sport, the schedule, the week in, week out.
Yep.
Hugely demanding in terms of physically, but also mentally. So having that, those opportunities to get them training, whether it's strength training, whether it's movement, complex movement, movement skill, movement therapy, whatever you want to call it, just getting them, their body moving outside the parameters of what they do.
Aside from just hitting golf balls.
Yeah. Yeah. Can be massively beneficial both psychologically and for their body, proprioceptively. So again, you could break down many programs from strength, endurance, speed, movement skill, movement therapy, and it's got to be slipped in at the appropriate times.
And again, one of the big challenges here is the schedule is so varied now that creating or even finding those little windows to be able to do anything with a player out with their day-to-day golf life, if you like, is very difficult.
Yes, tiny.
Very, very difficult.
Tiny.
Yeah.
So it can take, like I said, 2-3 years before you're in a position where you can provide a program to someone. You know that they've been coached well on it.
Yep.
And that they can go to the gym without doing themselves any kind of mischief because they've loaded themselves correctly. They're understanding what it is that they're loading. They understand the feelings that they're getting because that's been coached, that's been discussed, it's been reviewed, it's been everything that I will impart on my players. I do myself.
Yeah.
I experiment, I research, I keep myself fit and healthy, I eat well. I think that's paramount in terms of primarily that's my role.
And also to help you perform well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
At the end of the day, what we do for a living is also incredibly emotionally demanding, physically demanding, intellectually demanding.
I'm passing on a hell of a lot of my electrons with these players in a positive way.
That's what I joke about with the players, that they only need to worry about one game every week. I need to worry about 6 players' games every week.
Yeah. And for me, there's the 3 guys typically that I work with. You do your best, but to do your best, you've got to look after yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as we get older, it becomes a little bit harder.
Oh, for sure.
So let's go a little bit wild and build our perfect golfer, okay? What does the perfect golfer look like from a physical perspective, intellectual perspective, emotional perspective? And is that something that you can coach, or is that something, are you just blessed when that player comes knocking on your door and says, Rob, I want you to work with me?
Is it not crazy for us to sit here and discuss the perfect golfer?
Wow. It's a bit of fun.
You know me, I'm not out here for fun.
Here. No, that's very true, yeah.
I'm out here.
If it's fun, you're doing it wrong.
For one reason only. Yeah. We've had the experience of working with very coachable.
Yeah.
Very uncoachable.
Yep. Everything in between.
Everything in between. But being coaches and being people that we want to persevere and help.
Yep.
Some will develop at quicker rates, some will develop at slower rates. But I think we're very fortunate that we are able to create an environment where we do see the guys slowly develop. And we've had many discussions around, could be so simple if we just hired or noticed something very simple around a behavior,
yeah,
around an action, around a discussion that, okay, we mentioned that 6 months ago and he's got it. Great. What's next? What can we now do? And there's lots of different coachables that are working in parallel with one another. It's not just one thing. So perfect golf would probably that's such a hard question, dude.
Well, maybe we'll have the next podcast about that.
The perfect golfer.
The perfect golfer. Because I'm intrigued by it, because as I say, you and I have these fantastic conversations where we kind of fantasize about the perfect world for us to exist in. But if there was a perfect world for us to exist in, we wouldn't be needed. And we obviously have the frustrations when we're working with players and they're not moving at the pace we think they're capable of moving at. And then likewise, we get frustrated with players that are moving at a pace that's entirely unreasonable for them.
Yeah.
So we can't win one way or the other.
But it's knowing that we are trying our best with the right intention to create. I keep saying the word, I think I've said maybe the word environment far too many times so far, but it is key.
We're well into double figures in environment.
For me to be part of creating that for guys to develop. We've had many discussions on the level of what I think mediocrity and settling for second best. This is an elite level stage.
This is the top of the top.
This is the top of the top. And I want the best for the guys. So if there's something that fundamentally that's a real basic, fundamental, whether it's in practice, in the gym, I cannot accept it.
Yeah.
So I've got to ask the question.
Mediocrity cannot be
tolerated.
And if there's a rationale behind what they're doing and why they're doing it, and they've explained it well, and there's, okay, it makes sense, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
But you have to ask the question.
We have to ask the question, but also, how could we possibly improve on that process? So yes, it's how we can improve that process and asking the question. A lot of people will say, you know, you're all right today, you happy today? I will walk around these courses just with my brain ticking and just, how do we improve? How do we get better? What's the next thing? And how do we coach that? How do we implement that? When's the right time?
Because it is a unique skill, coaching at the highest level, because you don't have the luxury of being able to waste time. Ultimately, the player has to perform and develop. My analogy is that you've got a couple of racehorses, and one of them is the performance racehorse, one of them is the development racehorse, and both have to be running neck and neck by and large all the time. You don't get the luxury of being able to say, right, we're going to take 6 weeks off and work on your backswing. That doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. And the same with the training.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. And
no, really?
Well, I've not got quite enough memory in my memory card. This is coming from a man who was reluctant to sit down and talk about golf. What one piece of advice would you give a first-year professional who's got full playing rights on the European Tour? Now, whether that's coming from a physical perspective or you're putting your performance hat on, what one piece of advice would you give to a young man who's had a good amateur career and he's out here playing for real now?
How much time have we got left?
We've got enough.
One piece of advice.
Because we see, as I said, we talk about it a lot, that we see all these people out here who are clearly existing in a world of mediocrity. They're going through the motions week in, week out. And you also see lots of young players who in 5 years' time have inherited all the mediocre traits of the journeyman pros. How would you future-proof a young player against that?
It's find someone you can trust, whether it's your coach, whether it's your fitness guy, whether it's manager, to try and establish and create the right culture and environment for the player to be challenged to learn.
Because all I see out here for the majority of guys, not the majority of guys, for a lot of guys, is players reacting to the here and now all the time. And as a consequence of that, totally missing the big picture, totally missing the development of this athlete.
And that's where, if I look at some of the guys that I've worked with over the years, it's that thing of it being a journey, and it's you just do what you do, you carry on doing it, and not get caught up too much in... You've got to look at some of the intricacies, for sure. The intricacies, but also you've got to look at the long term and the development plan. There's very little in looking at the development plan.
The last shot you just hit and panicking because it wasn't quite the shot you wanted to hit.
Where are we going with it? What is the long term plan? And that's something I've learned this week. You know, there's the top guys out there that don't have a roadmap.
No,
that don't have that in place,
relying solely on luck and talent.
What are their fundamental processes? And that, for me, is creating the fundamental processes within performance, technique, physical, mental, nutrition. You could have, there's many building blocks of that foundation.
Maybe that's your one piece of advice.
Start to create those foundations. Because it's my belief that you've got the guys that are top 10 in the world, their foundations are of a strength that when things don't go as well, they're not free-falling.
It's still okay.
It's still okay.
And combine that with more talent than the majority of players, that's very difficult to beat.
Yeah.
Certainly over the course of a year or 5 years or a career, that's very difficult to beat.
But that talent can then also, where that talent comes from, is also having a good grounding and foundation that you can develop that talent.
Yeah, and a player that's open to it.
And a player that's open to it and happy to be challenged and wants to develop.
Rob, I think that's more than enough for our listeners to...
That's probably my first and only... podcast.
No, because it's been such a success, we're going to get you back in to do another one. Rob, thank you for your time, first of all. Many congratulations, not just solely on the work you've done with Fran, which has obviously come to a fabulous head this summer, but the work you've done with Torbjörn. Personally, I love working with you. The time we spend together as coaches is genuinely precious to me. I always learn something, and you've been a huge part of challenging my beliefs as a coach.
Yeah, me too.
And, well, long may that continue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.